We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, folks, it's a Monday edition of College Sports Now, talking college hoops. I'm Stephen Hartzell. We have Matt Norlander with us from CBS Sports. No relation at all to Henrik Norlander, who finished tied for 63rd in the PGA Tour over the weekend. I keep an eye on the PGA Tour, Matt. It matters, okay?
I've been waiting on this dude to win a tour event forever. I think he's got like a couple top 10 finishes. But,
he flirts. Yeah, he flirts. But the course in California this weekend, just too long. Shout out to Hudson Swafford, dogs on top. I mean, Georgia continues to just
that's who won
college, okay. College athletics and pro athletics for that matter. Michael Serber with us as well at @L_Serberino on Twitter, reeling in the years. Serber, did you have a great weekend? You doing okay, bud? You good?
Yeah, dude. It was a decent weekend. I don't know why my voice sounded like that just then, but I didn't do anything to deserve that.
Can I say something that is, Server, you might be able to relate to this as a North Carolina resident. Shoveled snow over the weekend, not as easy as it looks. Not as enjoyable as it appears. Like, hard. My body is barking today. I don't feel good at all. Rookie move by me, letting it kind of ice over and sit there for like 6 days.
Completely amateur. Yeah.
Yeah. Still, like, I thought it would just be like shovel, barrel, shovel.
Yeah, it's not
easy at all. I don't know how you guys deal with that up north. Really don't.
This whole ordeal, Hartzell, like, I will never not have like melting salt, like the big rock salt or whatever that you use on the side. I will never not have that for my sidewalks, walkways, driveways again. Because, I mean, it's still very, very dangerous to walk onto our front steps.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
You're going to be like the bad guy in Home Alone, the South Bend Shovel Slayer, just sprinkling salts on the sidewalk forever.
Yeah.
Until the end of time. Shout out to Home Alone, which I watched like 30 times during the holiday season. Probably the best Christmas movie ever made. Norlander, we're going to talk college basketball. That's what the show is built around.
Yes.
But let's just go ahead and get it out of the way, man.
Okay.
Everybody's talking about the NFL playoffs. Everybody's got a take on Chiefs and Bills. And, oh, poor Josh Allen. He didn't get to touch the ball in overtime. Let's just make up rules.
All rules are made up, by the way.
Yeah, but let's make up more rules. Like, it's not fair. It's not fair. You know it's not fair?
It's
losing
not
a game where you've got a lead with 13 seconds to go. That's not fair. How about you all do better? How about you squib the kick? Let's just get this out of the way, man. Everybody's got, like, NFL overtime rule takes, yourself included. You were very chatty on the bird, twitter.com last night. A lot of tweets, a lot of takes. So yeah, let's just go ahead and get it out, man. You are an NFL czar. You get to address the overtime rule, Norlander. How you fixing it?
Sure, we can go right into this before we get into plenty of college basketball talk. But yes, just so the listeners are aware, men's college basketball is 1A and NFL is 1B for my favorite sports. And it's been that way since I was basically, you know, preteen, essentially.
It's hard to do as a Bears fan, too. I mean, I respect on that, really.
Yeah, yeah, not huge easy. Bears fan. So college teams, I have no favorite. I didn't attend a D1 school, but huge Bears fan. So anyway, I think I know just about as much about the NFL as I do men's college basketball. So here's the deal. First of all, that was a phenomenal weekend. Best weekend of divisional playoffs ever. Incredible. I mean, the weekend before was atrocious, and this weekend more than made up for it. And even still, I'll just say this as an aside before I get my overtime take. As amazing as the NFL playoffs are, I'm still taking the NCAA tournament every single time. I mean, nothing beats the tournament.
Of
man.
Course you are. That's nothing very on brand for you, buddy. Nothing phenomenal. Beats the tournament. Great take. Way to go out on a limb.
The NFL playoffs gave us four tremendous games, right? You get that kind of excitement, you know, 12 to 15 times. Because you have more games, of course. But the NCAA tournament, baby. It's coming. All right. As for the overtime, first of all, you need to remember something. That once teams are even after 60 minutes, if they're even, they're even. The official that does the coin toss at overtime literally says we are starting a new game. The NFL game and its rules would stipulate that both teams should touch the ball at least once. So I don't care that the Buffalo Bills decided not to squib kick it with 13 seconds left.
You should.
I don't care that Buffalo's defense decided to wilt and thought it not be best to get a bogey on Travis Kelce. That's irrelevant. However you get to overtime, if the scores are level, they are level. You go essentially 0-0 into the bonus session. Dan Wetzel made a great point. I retweeted that. Particularly in modern football, where it is so offensively oriented and focused, and the rules have been more in favor of the team with the ball in this era than any era before, the defense is at a legitimate disadvantage if you don't get the ball first in overtime. Okay? And you are relying on a coin flip. Okay? Well, then the defense should make a stop. Hey, guess what? Neither defense made a stop. Kansas City's defense didn't have to try and make a stop because it lost the coin flip. This idea that it's don't want to hear excuses, play some defense. Kansas City didn't have to play defense because it won a coin flip. We could easily be talking about this the exact other way around, and if that had happened and Buffalo won the coin flip, marched down the field, Gabriel Davis caught his fifth touchdown, this would have been the second time in four seasons that this would have happened to Kansas City on its home field in the playoffs. The outcry would probably be even louder if it prevented Patrick Mahomes from moving on in the playoffs there. So you got to allow him for at least one touch. And then after that, I'm good. Each team gets a touch. You touch the football once. After that, it's sudden death. Simple as that. And I think that's what they're going to change. In the playoffs specifically, each team gets possession of the ball once. If it's even after that, no matter if neither team scores and we got a couple of punts, a couple of field goals, a couple of touchdowns, then it goes to sudden death. What I would like to see happen, here's my recommendation, is you squeak in a little bit of college football. Because I don't love the college. I still will take the NFL's overtime rule over college football. College football fundamentally changes the game. It changes the dimensions of the field. It's not the same game that you played for the 60 minutes leading up to that. Here's my overtime suggestion. I'm sure this is out there, but I haven't really seen it. I've seen some variations, but not exactly this. Overtime starts. Both teams are guaranteed to touch the ball at least once. If you score a touchdown, you are mandated to attempt a two-point conversion. There is no extra point. So by purely bringing that into the equation, you increase the likelihood that you will not go beyond two total possessions with each team. Yes, you still could. You could have both teams get touchdowns, both teams convert two-point conversions. That could still happen, but you reduce the likelihood because, you know, converting a two-point conversion is still less likely than making an extra point. So that's what I have. Coin toss, pick it. Each team gets possession at least once. If you intercept it, that's how you get your first possession. That's how you get it. If you score a touchdown, you have to go for two. The other team, yes, still gets to a chance to respond. If it's still 8-8 after that, then it's sudden death. Both teams have had a chance. Let's go. That's my solution.
Wow. So Matt Norlander wants to take one-third of football, the special teams aspect of football, and just completely remove it for overtime. Don't need you.
No, you
don't
actually will literally start overtime with special teams.
Okay, the guy kicks it off. Okay, very good. Great. No, yeah. Nothing that has to do with, like, splitting the uprights.
So I would
like
assume that you
Butker
also hate college.
Overtime.
You hate college football's overtime then?
I mean, I'm fine with it. I mean, it's not great. I mean, it's, look, if just put 10 minutes on the clock. Just, come on. 10 minutes, let's play. Go. Start over. New game. Then let's just simplify it. I mean, I hear what you're saying. Everybody's got takes, including yourself, which is why I had to tee it up for you. I mean, look, it was great game.
But my
Chiefs,
take is
Bills,
good.
Great game. Great game. 42-36. My neighbors across the street are Bills fans. They throw down every Sunday. Last night, it was, I'm not going to lie, it was dicey. Like, I, there were times I looked out the window just to make sure that structurally the house was still there, that there weren't flames that had engulfed said Bills fans' house. But it was dicey. I opened the window, opened the door, I heard screams. I mean, people were on the verge. It sounded, you know what it sounded like, Serber? It sounded like a fox. It sounded like a fox was outside my house. It sounded like a woman was screaming. You ever heard a fox outside in the wild, Norlander?
Have not.
Ooh, Serber. Go ahead.
Yeah. I heard it last night.
Yeah, you
my
did.
My dog, we let my dog out. We let Mona Bear out around 9:30 p.m. And she is a foxhound. And all of a sudden, she takes off. And I'm like, what is going on? Then I hear the feet. All of it, like 20 seconds later, I hear the feet. She's running. She's run all the way around the house. What I did not expect was the fox that ran up onto my deck right across my legs as she chased it. As it was running for its life. And then when my wife was like, what's going on out here? I was like, there's a fox. And it was trapped on our back porch. And I was like, let's go see if we can see it. But by the time we got to turn the corner, the fox let out a whoop. And my wife ran inside so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, the Serber residence.
That's what they sound like.
Yeah, the Serber household probably has rabies. I mean, y'all should probably get checked. There's no doubt.
Y'all We're all vaccinated against rabies.
Are you?
And vaccines work. Okay. I don't know if you deny that.
All right, very
if that's
good.
If that's your speed, but vaccines do happen to work.
Yeah, thank you. John Stockton will not be making an appearance on College Sports Now anytime soon. You hate to see it. All right. That's enough of the NFL talk. That's enough of the Fox and the Henhound talk. Hen house?
Hen house.
Woo! I'm serious, Norlander. You should look it up. You live in the woods. Like foxes.
We have a rogue fox around here up in Connecticut, actually.
They sound like somebody's being strangled. I mean, they have a very interesting call.
Woo!
let's talk college hoops. You guys would be proud of me. I did watch college basketball on Saturday. It doesn't happen often.
It's the least you could do as someone who, you know, hosts college basketball.
I know. You're not wrong. So I sat down. I was like, all right, Auburn, Kentucky, 1 o'clock on CBS. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Love it.
Teed it up. It was great. Now, here's my thing. Auburn got the win, 80-71. Norlander, if you're a Kentucky fan, though, you're putting an asterisk by this, right? Because you didn't get a healthy CATS cats, cats, cats in the jungle.
You didn't. Ty Washington went down with, you know, if you've played pickup hoops for a significant portion of your life at some point throughout high school, into college, you know, 20s, 30s, whatever, you're probably going to suffer the kind of injury that Ty Washington suffered. You go up for a shot, you come down wrong, you land on someone's foot, it tweaks your ankle. It gives me pain to even look at him suffer that kind of ankle injury. Kentucky was leading when he went down, so Kentucky fans, yeah, they're going to cling to the fact that they were leading when he left, and there was the potential that they would have been able to win had he stayed in for the whole game. I don't think that would have happened, but obviously it could have. This was the only scheduled meeting between Auburn and Kentucky this season. So Kentucky, if it wants to get its revenge, is going to have to get it in the SEC tournament, which if that were to happen, and by the way, Oscar Tshiebwe said afterward, yeah, we want that. You know, we think we're the better team. We want to see him again. And I'd love to hear that kind of stuff from a team's best player, and that's what Tshiebwe is for Kentucky there. If Auburn and Kentucky face off in the SEC tournament, you'll be there, Hartzell, right?
I will be there, yes. Yes.
Where is it again? Tampa?
It is at a place where they play NHL hockey. Amway Arena, maybe? Somewhere in Tampa, yeah.
Atrocious. But anyway, that could well have... It could. You know, peering down the road here, which would be... This would be about, I think, from 47 days from when we speak right now, maybe 48 days. Auburn versus Kentucky in the SEC tournament, be it in the semifinals or the championship game, could mean anything from Auburn playing for the number one overall seed to Auburn and or Kentucky playing for the one line period, or Kentucky maybe the difference between being on the two or the three line. There's a lot of things that if they were to meet again, that game could have some pretty high stakes. Kentucky is 15-4. Its losses against Duke on the opening night of the season at Champions Classic, at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame, oh, by the way, kind of coming along here. 12-6 has won like 8 of its past 9. Maybe Mike Bray's going to wind up having a tournament team, and that loss will not be as bad for Kentucky in March as it seemed when they took it in early December. The third loss came against LSU, an LSU team that as of late is not playing as well because it's dropped 3 in a row, but they're all reasonable losses, and now there's the loss at Auburn there. So Kentucky is still going to be in the conversation for a number one or number two seed so long as it can get the job done, and we'll talk about this on the Thursday episode later this week. Kentucky's going to go to Kansas on Saturday for the annual Big 12 SEC matchup, and that will be at Fog Allen Fieldhouse. And Kentucky will need to win that game if it wants to have a shot at the number one seed. That's at least my opinion. As for Auburn fans, this is it, man. We are recording this Monday morning in advance of the AP Top 25 coming out. I'm telling you, Auburn's going to be the number one team in the country. It was barely not the number one team a week ago. It had more first place votes than Gonzaga. Since then, Auburn beat Georgia by 23. What else is new? And, you know, that's you know, dog bites, man, basically. And then Saturday with the 9-point win on national television on the America's Most Watched Network, games just feel bigger on CBS. Auburn gets the high-profile win. Big-time stuff there. 18-1, and they look better than anyone else in the country at this point. When you look at what the roster is, beyond Jabari Smith, who might be the number one pick and is a lock. Unless a devastating injury happens, obviously we're not rooting for that, but I'm saying if he plays the rest of the season, Jabari Smith is going to be the first, second, or third pick in the NBA draft this year. Beyond him and beyond Walker Kessler, whose advancement and development since he left Carolina is stunning, you've got guys like Wendell Green Jr. and Katie Johnson, Zepp Jasper, a really good defender. They've got so many good pieces. Oh, by the way, Alan Flanagan is now coming back into the rotation, starting games. He was the team's best player a season ago. He had Achilles surgery in the offseason. He's just coming into form. I wrote this 2 weeks ago on CBSSports.com. It's scary but true. Auburn's not even at its full form yet. It can still and probably will still get better. It's phenomenal. So, yes, good on the Tigers. They're a great story for the sport right now, and this is one of many reasons why I love college hoops, is that you get every single season, you'll get a handful of stories that are unpredictable, and you'll have teams that are nationally relevant that don't often get there. College football, and this is nothing against the sport, but it doesn't tend to offer this as frequently. Yes, you get some great stories, but Cincinnati, for getting the Final Four, that was a huge story. Cincinnati had actually been good. Auburn has not been top five good in 20 years, man. They're the number one team in the sport right now. I think that's a really awesome thing for men's college hoops, and I expect by the time everyone is listening to this or watching on the Varsity channel on YouTube, hello, that Auburn will be the number one team in the country. Gonzaga will be number two, and Bruce Pearl will have earned that. Good times down there on the plains.
So, well said. Well said. Yeah, I'm not going to fight you on the college football argument because, yeah, it's the same eight teams that are kind of, yeah, like in the running every year. I that's fine. Here's my thing on Auburn. You buy these guys. Like, it sounds like you buy these guys.
Yes, I buy them for sure. It's not like, ooh, this is like, I want to be clear about this. It's not this, ooh, this is a fun team right now. They look pretty cool. They got a number one pick. Like, we'll see what happens this March. No. I think that Auburn's going to lose games. But when we get to the NCAA tournament, aside from the people that might just kind of be like swinging in and they're like, oh, I'm not used to seeing Auburn on the one or two line, I'm not going to take them like as seriously as maybe four or five other teams. Don't include that group. They are going to be considered a top four national title contender no matter where they land on the overall seed hierarchy. If they're number one overall seed or if they're the best two seed or whatever, because of who they have and what they've been, yes, weigh in on Auburn, can win the national championship. A worse Auburn team made the Final Four in 2019 from the five line. So, yeah, I'm in. You're not? Uh-huh. Are you selling? Hesitant?
Look, admittedly, Norlander, you have watched significantly more Auburn basketball than your boy. I'm looking at their schedule. I mean, yeah, they've got a nice road win at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what else have you done away from home this year? Like, I mean, well, listen, I'm just saying it's, okay. Listen, it's still January. I did the math. We got inside of 7 weeks to go. until Selection Sunday, until the bracket, right? The sheet. So, and we'll see. Like, here's the thing. The SEC, it's really good at the top, although I don't know how good. I mean, LSU's on a losing skid. You've already said Arkansas is not going to make the dance this year. Still can't believe
it.
It got
a win over the weekend against A&M. I might be wrong on that.
Okay.
We'll see.
All right. So we're already walking it back. We're three shows in. We're already walking it back. I'm just saying. I'm looking at the remaining schedule. Like, I'd like to see Auburn get tested on the road. I'd like to see him go to Bud Walton. I'd like to see him go down to the Swamp. What do they call it? The O-Dome? Whatever. Florida.
Whatever it is now.
The bubble team. I mean, they'll be fighting for
bubble
their lives
team,
at the end of February. They got to go to Tennessee. I need to see it on the road. Because, look, your colleague Gary Parrish was there. He was doing sidelines for CBS. That place is a madhouse. Like, yeah. Auburn Arena, the jungle, that place was upside down. I mean, there are a few environments like that in college basketball. So, shout out to Bruce Pearl because he's built it. Didn't used to be like that.
Yeah, without a doubt. Before we move on, I do want to – now, you bring up a good point. You're ahead of it as usual, Hartzell, because I can see a situation in which people then look back at Auburn's schedule. Let's say Auburn gets to the tournament. Let's just say as a four-loss team. I still think they would have a chance to be in a one seed with four losses. But let's just say there's four losses no matter how they come. And then you look, they say, well, they only had to play Kentucky once. Mm-hmm. You look at the road games that they got, the breaks they had in the SEC. They did not have to go and play at LSU either, right? So there's not they didn't have the toughest schedule within the SEC overall. Maybe there'll be some skepticism there. I will say this, and again, this is how it depends on how the quadrants break down. Right now, as we speak, Monday, January 4th, 24th, Auburn's record against Quad 1 and Quad 2 teams, the best teams on its schedule, regardless of venue, home, neutral court, away, is 10-1. That's the best record in the country. The only other team with 10 Quad 1 and Quad 2 wins combined is Wisconsin, which has a 10-3 Quad 1 and 2 record. So the devil's a little bit in the details with that because, like, Auburn's 5-1 in Quad 1, 5-0 in Quad 2, and when you look at the teams that qualify for those quadrants and the situations they're in, it's understandable. Like, you can have a road game against St. Louis, you know, Quad 1 level, but St. Louis is not necessarily a tournament team, though it's top 70 in Ken Palm right now. Stuff like that, right? Ole Miss playing at them doesn't really impress a lot of people, but it's a quad two win. So just keep that kind of stuff in mind. But I hear what you're saying. I am way in on this team. And I don't know if college basketball will get another first-time champion. We've had like six of them in the past 20 years, maybe seven of them in the past 20 years. Again, that's something that college football hasn't offered us in God knows how long. But Auburn will be on the short list of teams right there with the likes of Gonzaga that could potentially be a first-time national champion in 2022.
Yeah, very good. I'm here for it. A very impressive performance, even though Jabari Smith, look, I'm not a lottery or an NBA draft guru or scout by any stretch. Yo, man, shoot the ball, man. Like, just, this guy took four shots in the first half, man. Jack it up. Let's go. Come on, man. Put on a show.
That's what makes him dangerous, man. He does not need to do that. He will go and get his if he needs to, but I know. I hear
you. Jabari, go get yours, son. Come on, let's go. Flex on these dudes. But yeah, Auburn, nice win, 80-71 over Kentucky. That was the game of the weekend. We talked about it on our Thursday show. It delivered. I mean, Kentucky had the lead at halftime. They had some injuries. Auburn came roaring back and got the dub. What else stood out from the weekend that was, Norlander? I'll give you first crack at this one.
Well, let's tour around here. Kansas beats Kansas State 78-75. It comes back from 16 down at the break. It's the largest comeback from a halftime deficit in program history. Now, Kansas State needed to win that game at home to really start to build a case to be an NCAA tournament team. But even still, like, the Big 12 might send 8 of its 10 teams to the tournament. It's insane. That building, by the way, was witness to some history in general because you had Kansas coming back and doing what it did there. Which was significant, by the way, for Kansas to still remain in the one seed conversation, like getting those kind of wins. But you also had Ayoka Lee for Kansas State women, and I mentioned this on our Sunday night Ion College Basketball podcast. 61 points for a women's player had never been done before, ever, in women's college hoops. Ayoka Lee of K-State had 61 on 23 of 30 shooting. Did not attempt a three-pointer. I think that's an awesome story. We had a single game high. So the Octagon of Doom was witness to an all-time collapse by the men, and then just an epic performance on the women's side with Ayoka Lee, K-State junior center there. So I wanted to give her a quick shout-out. Elsewhere around the weekend, Villanova. I'll just lob it back to you before we hit some other stuff. Villanova beats Georgetown. It was one of those games where Georgetown was in it for a while. They wind up losing 85-74. Did you know Georgetown at 0-5 in the Big East, this is its worst start ever. It has never until this year gone 0-5 out of the gate in Big East conference play. Can you just give me your everyman, but yet college sports aficionado take on the state of the Hoyas and Ewing? Like, I just want your I want your thoughts before I offer up mine.
Well, okay, so you and I are roughly the same age, Norlander. I'm 38, okay? I came up when Georgetown and St. John's were both... I mean, look, I missed out on, like, the Chris Mullen era at St. John's, but, like, right. Northeast college basketball was pretty good. Like, those guys... Like, they were respectable... Not just respectable, they were, like, flagship programs up there. I'm not trying to lump St. John's in here. They're catching strays. But Georgetown is a proud college basketball program that just can't get it together. And... Look, you have more insight on that conference than I do, although we might have to get our man John Fanta up in here to really wax on the Big East.
Yeah.
Love that guy. I know that Ewing had a miracle run in the Big East tournament last year, and they made it to the dance before they got their shit kicked in. I think, was it Colorado? It just blew the doors off of those guys in the round of 68. So, if not for that run, you're talking about a Georgetown program that, because they were, what were they, like an 8 or 9 seed in that conference tournament last year? I mean, they came out of nowhere and won that thing. So, yeah, not great. I mean, I don't know how you fix it. Is Ewing in over his head? I mean, I know that was a guy who was in the running for a bunch of NBA jobs and never got the call up. So, like, what's the scout on Georgetown as a program and just, like, Ewing as the head coach? I mean, is he not recruiting? Is he not?
Well, he actually did land. They've got a player named Aminu Muhammad, who was a 5-star, was the best. He's a freshman this season. He was the best recruit that Ewing had actually been able to bring in. And finally, he got someone. He was something of a local prospect. He grew up in the area, and then he played prep ball in the Midwest. But and Muhammad's been solid. He was the easy preseason pick for Big East Freshman of the Year. Actually, the Big East as a conference did not have the kind of freshman talent incoming that you would think the Big East should have, because it actually has been fairly decent in recent seasons. That wasn't the case this year in Georgetown, coming off an NCAA tournament appearance, had the best freshman there. But man, oh man, this team is defensively, it's just atrocious, man. Atrocious. Actually, it was respectable last season and merely pedestrian before that. Now it's just fallen off a complete cliff. And so, yeah, Georgetown's lost 6 in a row. Here's what won't happen. Georgetown will not fire Patrick Ewing. That will not be happening. That will never be happening. It's not how they do things there. And
right. And he's a made man. I mean, he is a made man. Yeah.
Made man. And I actually wrote about this. He got hired. It was 2017, because I remember it being, I had to write about it out in Phoenix at the Final Four. And I had to write it in a tight spot, and I was like sweating over my keyboard, like outside as I was filing this column, because it was huge news. Georgetown's going to hire Patrick Ewing, all that stuff. And I remember just writing at the time, you know, this kind of decision can really pay off in a memorable, magnificent way, but it also, you know, this is an indication that you have not moved on from the John Thompson era. His power over this program is still huge at that point. Obviously, Big John was still alive. And this is where, like, I don't know if Georgetown can get out of this cycle that it's in. The Big East at this point has essentially, it's an 11-team league. And it has two programs specifically. If you want to include St. John's, I think that's fair too. And say it has three programs that just can't seem to just break the rhythm and be in that 7-11 range. They're just like almost always there. They can't get to the top half of the league. St. John's, which was supposed to be a tournament team, oh, by the way, is 12-5, 3-4 in the league, will be lucky if it can somehow get hot and make the NIT.
Wow.
St. John's is an issue. DePaul has been horrendous forever, 1-7 in the league. But even DePaul right now has a league win. And then it's Georgetown. That Big East tournament run last year yeah, like what's interesting is there are no fans in MSG, but even though, and imagine, I remember thinking like, imagine if they had done this with fans in the building, but then again, if there are fans in the building, maybe Georgetown doesn't do it, right? You just, all these variables that you can't account for. But even still, I happen to have two buddies who went to Georgetown that I still keep in touch with. And man, this isn't unique to the Georgetown base, but that faction of people is so hungry and starving for national consistent relevance, and they just can't seem to get it.
Yeah,
I don't know if this is going to be the last year for Patrick Ewing or not. If we look up and Georgetown is 1-12 in the league, maybe Ewing will say, I'm going to do what's best for my alma mater. This isn't working, and I'm going to resign. And if that happens, it gets really interesting. And you know why? Because then you'll have Maryland and Georgetown open at the same time. And while this was not true 20 years ago, it's true now. Maryland's the better job.
Yeah.
Now, it's the tougher climb. It's the tougher climb. But that would just be fascinating. I don't know. I'm glad you wanted to talk a little bit about the Hoyas. I mentioned them very briefly in passing on the Sunday night podcast because, frankly, they're not relevant. They only become relevant that they're so bad, we wonder if Ewing will step aside or not. I can't offer a prediction as to whether I think that happens this year or not. I don't know. But it's not looking good. And you sound like a little bit of an old head when you say what I'm about to say, but it feels true. Like, and part of it's because I've lived 75% of my life in the Northeast, but man, when Georgetown is a top 25 level team, it does feel like college basketball just has a little more juice and energy to it. It's not just Georgetown. You can say the same thing about Duke and Carolina and Kentucky, and Georgetown historically is not a blue blood. I get all that. It's not even UConn, right? It's not Syracuse, but it's, when it's good, like it really can be close. It was a top two, top three at worst program in the 80s, which is the greatest decade for college basketball ever. And there's just something missing about the sport when Georgetown doesn't have a future pro and a star, a reason to tune in. They're in the tournament, and it hasn't been the case. So I've been kind of waxing long here for you, Hartzell, but it's true. Like even under JT3, they were making tournaments with regularity. Now they were the ultimate like letdown team. They'd get a 2 seed, a 3 seed, a 4 seed, and they get knocked out in the first weekend, if not the first round. So there was that element, but they were still getting there. That's not the case anymore. They made it last year. They got blown out. It was a fluke run in the Big East, and so here we are.
Listen, Norlander, embrace your inner old head, buddy. Just let it happen. Just get out of the way. Just toss pride aside. Just embrace it.
But you hear that all the time, right? I like, you know, the NFL's better when the Raiders are good. Well, I think the NFL's awesome if the Raiders are good or if they aren't good. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
I'll let you in on a secret, buddy. I don't watch the NFL. I watched it this weekend because I was like, it's on. My wife's a Chiefs fan. She's from there. But look, you're a Northeastern guy. I'm a guy from the Southeast, man. I grew up in ACC and SEC country. College basketball is better when there's programs in the Northeast that are good besides Villanova. Villanova's kind of been carrying that thing for the last decade. I know Seton Hall and UConn have had their moments, but yeah, man, Georgetown.
UConn's had some more moments than Seton Hall.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, recently, yeah. I mean, UConn was down. I mean, they're trying
to get
it together.
But they have 4 titles since 1999.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, sure. You're fine. You're right. One of those was over my beloved Jackets, by the way.
Yeah.
We don't need to go back.
We don't.
Revisit that.
Nope.
But, yeah, Georgetown, they had a lead. I mean, they were trying, but yeah, Villanova's just really good. But I look, the Big East is always a conference from afar that I grew up watching, you know, like we all did, the tournament at the Garden. I mean, that was a different looking Big East. You had Pitt in that league. I mean, it was just different, but still Northeast college basketball needs you just like you do West Coast college football. Like it helps when Southern Cal or Oregon or Washington is relevant, and in college hoops, just it's not there. At least it's not there with regularity and consistency. So,
yeah,
there's your Georgetown. There's your Georgetown segment.
By the way, as we just kind of link some rivals here, and we'll get more into coaching stuff, I think, as we drift into like mid to late February when it becomes more viable. But just as an by the way, I got nothing to say about Duke winning because Duke won. It should have won, but Syracuse lost again, and Syracuse was supposed to lose, but Syracuse is 9-10. Syracuse is a 9-10 team, Georgetown's all-time rival there, and Jim Boeheim is certainly If he's not on the green, he's breaking out a pitching wedge and approaching the 18th hole of his career at this point. And, you know, will we see? I don't know. Will we see Syracuse have a chance? Will Jim Boeheim call it quits after this? Can he bring himself to call it quits after having such a terrible team? They've never been this bad at this point in the season. Jim Boeheim has never had a Syracuse team this bad. Into January, mid-January, late January, it's never been this bad. So, I don't know. We'll see. I didn't think that this year would be busy on the turnover after the busiest, most noisy coaching carousel cycle ever in 2021. Men's college basketball, I've never seen it. But now you look around, you think, well, Maryland's open. Maybe Georgetown. We'll see on Syracuse. It's a little bit shaky at Louisville. There's no shortage of like high-profile programs that could still have coaching changeover in the Big East, by the way, if you'll allow me before we get to Wake Forest, because I think you got thoughts on UNC and Wake. One other thing, I do want to mention Marquette. Marquette is on fire. If you go to barttorvik.com, you can actually
Shout out to Bart.
We'll get Torvik back on the pod too. We'll get Torvik on the pod. But you can sort out how teams have played over a certain time span, certain date. You can adjust this. This in the year 2022, since we flipped it over, January 2nd to now, Marquette's the fifth best team in men's college basketball. The only teams that have been better, and this is how they've performed against the schedule they've had, the opponents they've had: Gonzaga, Arizona, Houston, Villanova, Marquette. Those are the top five teams in 2022 so far. Big time stuff for Shaka Smart's program, man. Wins again to launch itself into the rankings, obviously, to make itself a player in the Big East, beat Xavier. Marquette has now won six consecutive games after starting 0-3 in league play. In doing so, it has defeated Providence, likely NCAA tournament team, at Georgetown, home against DePaul, then beats a Seton Hall team that will be competing for the tournament, if not in, wins at Villanova for the first time ever in that building, the Finn, and then wins at home against Xavier 75-64 on Sunday. Marquette has been awesome to this point. Shaka Smart, good on you. The Golden Eagles have a road game at Seton Hall Wednesday. I would expect a bump in the road at this point. I think Seton Hall will hold serve, but then they're going to play at Providence Saturday. I'm debating on going to that game right now. We got a 14-6 Marquette team that is just getting the job done at this point, man. Marquette, quad one, six wins. The only other team with more in the country is Baylor with seven. No other team has six. So I might be going to Marquette-Providence on Saturday. I might have to check that out at the Dunk in person. But I did want to give a little bit of love to what Shaka Smart's been able to do, because at this stage of the season, and yes, they've taken on some losses, but at this stage in the season, he has been a top five new face, new place kind of coach, and the Golden Eagles are way ahead of schedule, because this was not a team that anyone expected would be in the NCAA tournament conversation heading in, and that's exactly where they are right now.
I took a peek. I don't bet on college basketball during the regular season anymore. Okay, I used to. I learned my lesson. You have no idea. It's absurd. 20-point halftime lead, lose by 15. Just, it's stupid. Marquette was an underdog at home against Xavier on Sunday.
Yeah.
So, no respect in the markets.
Which was wrong. Yeah.
No respect in the markets. Just saying.
Agreed.
The secret might be out on Marquette. And by the way, buddy, I'm here for the Syracuse slander, man. Anytime you wanna heap on, Serber and I work with way too many Syracuse guys because we work in broadcasting and Newhouse makes broadcasters. It's a factory. They're obnoxious. They're insufferable. And you know what, folks? It's overdue. Syracuse. Maybe there's too many Boeheims on the roster. Maybe that's why you guys aren't good. Just a thought. Maybe you guys should maybe your coach should go out there and recruit. Here's the thing. Who would Syracuse bring in? Because wasn't Mike Hopkins supposed to be the guy? Like, wasn't he supposed to be the coach in waiting? And he's in Seattle, and that's not going well for the Huskies, at least not lately.
That's the question. Would it be someone, you know, in-house, if you will, Adrian Autry, Jerry McNamara? Well, where's the program right now? Like, is that going to inspire confidence? It's a tough spot. I don't think Boeheim retires this year. I just don't see it happening.
He's not unthinkable, but I don't think he wants to go out like this. Yeah.
At least one more season. I just don't think he's going to do it. So a year could change everything, but it was going to be Hopkins. That obviously is not a viable pick right now because Hopkins hasn't been able to do hardly anything at Washington. They're bad again. We'll see. That's a conversation from down the road. You want to talk about the all-time, what are they? I've written about this before. In the history of college sports, there has never been a person with a longer direct affiliation with one university than Jim Boeheim. He played there and has spent, I had the stat when I wrote about it. I don't remember it off the top. He has spent something like, if you include his childhood when he was not there, he has spent more than 75% of his life living, employed by Syracuse University. He defines that school. We don't know what Syracuse is without him. You know, like, he goes so far back into the 60s with this program that who knows what it's going to be whenever he's no longer coaching there. That Duke was good before Mike Krzyzewski, and Mike Krzyzewski didn't only ever coach at Duke. So I am fascinated to see whenever change comes at Syracuse, who takes over and what it becomes. I don't know, but I don't think that he is going to retire this season. It's the same thing with Ewing, even though their coaching resumes are not remotely similar. Syracuse will not be firing Jim Boeheim. It will be Jim Boeheim stepping down, and I think that's not happening until 2023 at the earliest.
Good news for Syracuse fans. Lacrosse season starts very soon, so you have that to look forward to. Let's keep things in the ACC. Yes, I do want to talk about Wake Forest basketball. They beat the life out of North Carolina on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Another game, by the way, that Vegas had is a very small point spread. Wake was like a 1.5-point favorite in that game. They beat them by like 22. So two sides to this, Norlander. One, Wake Forest is coming off of a season, and I know COVID did very weird things to college sports.
Yeah.
But Wake Forest last year was bad. They were 6-16, okay? They were awful. Now, again, COVID, they were on a long pause. I think Forbes and like half of the team were like had it. I mean, it was a thing. They're 16-4 this year. They're 6-3 in the ACC. You mentioned that we're recording the show on a Monday morning. I've got to think the Deeks might be sneaking into the AP Top 25 later today. There's that side of this that I want to talk about. And then there's the North Carolina side, who played two road games last week at Miami and at Wake Forest and lost by a combined 50 points.
Yeah. How about this? Let's start on North Carolina. We'll continue the trend of some disappointing programs, power programs, big-name programs, and then we'll transition into Wake with teams coming off of COVID fluke years, if you will. So with UNC, the fan base is fidgety, and I understand that. I would advise a bit more patience because Hubert Davis is half a season into his career with the Tar Heels, okay? It's not going the way you want it to go, but you're still a tournament team projected at this point. You're still a top 45 team in KenPom. Preseason expectations were that UNC would be somewhere in the 20 to 30 range, and you have fallen short of that as we speak today. Now, the glaring stat on KenPom, if you go to UNC's page, is that there are 358 teams in men's college basketball, D1. Carolina ranks dead last in non-steal turnover percentage on the defensive end. Okay, they don't force the issue. They're 354th in turnover percentage, period. They don't turn teams over. They are not a good defensive team. It is unusual to watch how UNC is running its stuff this year. It just doesn't look... Now, it shouldn't look the same because this is Hubert's team and he should be doing what he thinks is best for it. But they have been a problem away from home. This is the primary talking point, I think, among the Carolina fan base at this point. They are non-competitive in a game against Purdue that I saw in person. They're not non-competitive. They just weren't ever going to beat Purdue. They were... I saw that game up close. There was no doubt, okay? They're not the same level team as Purdue. Tennessee, the next day was even worse. Those were games at Mohegan Sun. And then they peel off 5 wins, and they got to a point where they were 8-2. But even when they were 8-2, they had some scuffles on the road against Charleston. They looked good in a road game against Georgia Tech. They beat Michigan at home at a time when we thought Michigan was going to be better than what it actually is. But nevertheless, they get to 8-2. Okay, maybe there's a chance here. Then there's all the COVID stuff that happens with the CBS Sports Classic. They have to pivot. They wind up playing Kentucky, which was not the scheduled game, and they get blasted in Las Vegas, 98-69. After that, Notre Dame on the road, lose to start the year, January 5th, and now two straight losses on the road. You mentioned the stats before, combined 50 points to Miami and to Wake Forest, which could both be tournament teams. I think at least one of those teams is getting to the NCAA tournament for sure. And so, yeah, UNC is 12-6 right now. Away from home, it hasn't been good. At home, it's been a much better team, more efficient team. Some of that has been the competition, which we have to take into account. And as we talk here on a Monday morning, UNC is going to host Virginia Tech on Monday night. So if you're getting this podcast on Tuesday, you already know what's happened there. I will be extremely interested to see what Carolina does here, because Virginia Tech has been among the most disappointing teams in the country this season. Was wow. expected to be an NCAA tournament team, is nowhere close to that, has been one of the worst teams in the ACC. If UNC is a viable NCAA, all I'm saying, a viable NCAA tournament team, that is my baseline evaluation here. If you are a viable NCAA tournament team, that can mean 6 seed, 8 seed, 4 seed, whatever. Not saying title contender, not saying bubble team. Viable NCAA tournament team. You come off this 2-game losing streak, you're in your home building against an underperforming Virginia Tech team, and you win with at least some level of definitiveness. You win this game by 7, 9, 12 points there. I want to see what they do Monday night. But yeah, it's an interesting first season for Hubert Davis. I think ultimately they're going to be okay and they're going to get into the tournament, but there's work to be done.
How about that? Norlander giving UNC a must-win ultimatum Monday night against the Hokies. Got to have it. You want to guess the line, by the way? I've got it in front of me. You want to guess the line?
Yes,
Virginia
I do.
Tech at North Carolina, 8 o'clock at the Dean Dome, Chapel Hill.
Give me UNC 4.5.
It's 4.5, yeah.
Is it really? Stop.
It's 4.5.
I swear I did not know the line, didn't see the line, didn't look at the line. That's
what happens when you hang out on Ken Palm and Bart Torvik's websites all day. You know, you tend to have an eye for this stuff. Right. Yeah, North Carolina, 4.5 point favorite against VT. Scary,
right,
man. Scary game. Let's talk about Wake Forest, though. I mean, yeah they beat the life out of North Carolina in Winston-Salem on Saturday night. And this is a team, like, you tell me, preseason expectations. We just mentioned how the Deacs were terrible a year ago, and COVID had a lot to do with that. It was just a bizarre season. But I've got to think this is a program that's overperforming in Steve Forbes' second season, yeah?
It is, but, you know, Forbes also, like, last season was his first season with COVID. There was no expectations whatsoever. I remember hitting up Forbes before last season when I was doing my 1 to 358 or 356, how many teams were there a year ago. And I was like, hey, listen, and I said this like in jest, but I was like, just so you know, I'm putting you guys dead last in the ACC and I'll have you somewhere in the hundreds. And his response was something along the lines, and I think it's okay to share this now. They're good now and whatever. He's like, you'd be an idiot not to. I want to be last. Yeah. Keep those expectations nice and low. And he was right. Like, he just knew, like, it was going to be, it was COVID first season, the roster he inherited, like, you know, got to try and make the best of it. They won 5 games against D1 teams a year ago. Now, Forbes is showing why he has been highly respected, not just as a head coach, but you go back to his time as an assistant, just knows how to get the job done, man. Yes, they are overperforming expectations, but they've got a couple of really nice players. Jake LaRavia, who I shared this on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, but I will repeat it here because this is kind of wild. Jake LaRavia in the win over UNC, he went for 31-10. The last time anyone had 30-10 in a game against UNC, guys were named Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett, and the only other player in the past like 12 years to do it was Jabari Parker. And now Jake LaRavia at Wake Forest did it against UNC. Pretty good stuff there.
And that's Zion before he hit 3 bills in
New
Orleans.
There we go.
That's before.
Between him and Alondis Williams, who's been one of the 5 best transfers in the country this season, along with LaRavia. Like, they're like 2 of the 5 best, basically. LaRavia came from Indiana State, and Alondis Williams came from Oklahoma. He also added 23. Wake Forest has got something going, man. And I don't feel the same way about Wake being good as I do, say, at Georgetown. But you and I, again, we're the same age. And in the 90s when Duncan was there and Randolph Childress was there, and Wake, we just saw Wake Forest play with a number next to its name on national television way more frequently than not. And so you get a little bit of the feels and the cockles of your heart. It's good to see Wake Forest good again. This program has been a non-factor nationally. I'm bringing up the sports reference page right now. They made it once to the tournament under Manning. They went to Dayton and they didn't win. Barely registers as it. That's not nationally relevant. When Dino Gaudio was there, they were a 4 seed in 2009. They made it again, and he actually got fired as a 9 seed. That team was disappointing. But it basically has been 12 seasons.
Dino got him to number one in the country at one point, did he not? I think he did.
That I can't remember. You might be right, but I don't specifically remember if that was the case or not. You're probably right because Wake Forest started 16-0 in the 08-09 season. So you're likely correct. They probably were the number one team by the time they got there. But yeah, we're going on a dozen years since Wake Forest was nationally relevant. It's not there yet. Like, it's getting there. You get into the rankings, you start playing some games in January and February on Monday and Tuesday nights, or a big feature game on a Saturday, then you can say you truly returned to national relevance. Wake Forest isn't quite there yet, but they're really knocking on the door. They got a game on Monday that they should win here in a few hours against Boston College, and then they're at Syracuse. So, yeah, good stuff. And who knows? Maybe we'll have to get Forbes on the show at some point, too.
Server, you want to go to the game tonight? A little BC Wake Forest at the Joel? What's up, man? You want
to
go?
I tried to get you to go to the Carolina game.
That was at night.
Like, why would I?
Hang on a sec. That was 8 o'clock at night on a Saturday.
Oh, boy.
Explain to me why that's not like a decent time to go to a basketball game.
This game tonight.
And it's Wake Carolina, but you want to go see Boston College?
This game
really?
Tonight, this game tonight's at 6. We could grab dinner beforehand, little early bird special, roll into the Joel just like all the other old folks who hang out.
I wanted to go to the Carolina game and you said no, so I'm happy right now to do this. No, I don't want to go. It's at 6 p.m. on a Monday.
Norlander, you might be coming down here writing features about Wake Forest hoops in a couple months, man. You never know.
Maybe.
I mean, I got some barbecue spots if you need them, man. Let me know. That's what they do here.
Thanks.
You don't do barbecue?
Pescatarian.
What about donuts?
Of course.
Krispy Kreme. No, Winston-Salem.
That's the donut. Now, listen, a hot Krispy Kreme is just irresistible. I've actually sat in a car with Jeff Gooden and watched him eat 6 in like 12 minutes. I've seen that happen. It's disgusting, but they're good. But this is the donut spot you're giving me?
No, I'm just saying, we're talking about Winston-Salem spots, like Wake Forest basketball, the Joel.
It's where Krispy Kreme is from, Mr.
Yeah,
Norlander.
Pork,
is it really?
Yeah, it's from here. Sorry, I should have specified that. Yeah, we also make Texas Pete hot sauce. I don't know if you guys get that up there in Connecticut. Probably not.
We do. No, we do.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, there you go. Did not know Krispy Kreme originated in Winston-Salem.
Now you know. Now you know. All right. One other thing I wanted to talk to, it kind of vibes with the Wake Forest talk, like COVID fluke seasons. Like, Wake Forest was terrible a year ago. Now they're really good. There's other programs out there, Matt, that were really good last year and aren't good this year. I'm thinking about Michigan specifically. I don't know if it's fair to, like, say that COVID is because they were good last year. That doesn't really make a lot of sense. But are there other fluke seasons when you go back and look at this? Have you had a chance to kind of dive into this at all? I mean, like, Michigan is struggling this year. They're like a 500 team. They did have a nice win over Indiana on Sunday. But, I mean, they were lights out last year. I mean, they started the year like 11-0. And I'm curious from your perspective if there's other programs like that.
Yeah. Michigan, well, so it can depends on what side of the coin you're looking at this, but Michigan registers as one of the most disappointing teams in the country this season. That's not arguable. It was preseason top five. It brought back enough talent. Hunter Dickinson was thought to maybe be a preseason first team All-American. He actually had an outstanding game against Indiana. Indiana's not handling prosperity well. It beats Purdue on last Thursday and then comes back on Sunday and has a no-show against Michigan. So, I think the IU fan base is a little bit frustrated, but that team's still in a good spot, and I think it's going to make the tournament. Michigan, yeah, a little bit of a flip. And I'm not saying we should blame any of this stuff on COVID. Although what's interesting is a year ago, Michigan had a COVID issue, and you may or may not recall, but the university actually implemented, we've gone through so many phases of this pandemic, but there was the UK variant. Remember the old UK variant?
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple variants ago. But the UK variant was detected on Michigan's campus, and because of this, Michigan, when it wasn't even suffering an outbreak, had to shut down its program. They were not allowed to gather. The players had to stay in their dorms. And that caused, let's just say, some contention among some other programs in the Big Ten, because Michigan was allowed to win a conference regular season championship, even though it didn't play as many games as other teams.
That's right. Yeah. I remember Illinois. They were ticked
off.
That's right. Illinois was pissed. Yeah,
that's
right. I remember
that now. And so Michigan did have an outbreak earlier this season, and then Juwan Howard was very specific to point out that they were going to try and make up as many games as they possibly could. As it stands right now, the Wolverines They are scheduled to play 18 games. Some teams are scheduled to play 19. Some games are scheduled to play 20. We'll see if they can squeeze all of them in. I think they actually might be able to. But yeah, Michigan has been one such program. Other ones, I mean, let's be honest. Last year, one of the biggest storylines was the fact that you had the likes of Duke, Kentucky, Michigan State, Arizona. They were abnormally bad last season.
Yeah.
And now they've all rebounded. Arizona is a top three team in the country per the rankings, and I think it's a top five team objectively. Michigan State has the best record in the Big Ten as we speak here on Monday morning. Now, it did make the tournament, but it barely got in. Remember, it went to Dayton in the first four, lost to UCLA, which made the final four. And then Duke and Kentucky, I mean, Kentucky had one of the five worst seasons in the history of its program. It was a nine-win team, just terrible. And then Duke was just bad. They weren't as bad as Kentucky, but they didn't make the tournament for the first time since 95. Shouts to Pete Gaudette. And so those were teams that a year ago were abnormally bad, and now they have bounced back. Michigan, we are getting the reverse of it, but I thought it was worth mentioning Duke, Kentucky, Michigan State, Arizona, poor a season ago. Things have changed. They're back to normal, if you will, and things are looking good. I think ultimately, mark me down for two seed for Duke, two seed for Kentucky, four seed for Michigan State.
Wow.
Two seed for Arizona.
Okay. Yeah, Blue Bloods, they're back. Bruce Pearl, by the way, he was saying that he thinks that this Kentucky team's as good as the Anthony Davis team, which is high praise.
All right, I thought he said it was the best since then. I don't know if he said
since
it was as good.
Yeah, since. Yeah. Sorry.
Which is
still
not true, because the 15 team that went 38-1, it was better than this team. So, but it's fine. Like, Bruce is going to say that in a moment because it's the opponent he's facing, but this team is not as good as the Carl Anthony Towns team. It's not.
Well, I would love to see a rematch, as you mentioned when we were talking about the Kentucky-Auburn game at the start of the show. They're not playing each other again the rest of the way, which is unfortunate. But if they do hook up in Tampa, and by the way, I mispronounced the name of the arena. It's Amalie or Amalie Arena. Amway's in Orlando. Amalie, which is also the name of a bad French movie, is the name of the arena.
That's a great French
Tampa.
Movie. What do you...
I've never seen it, obviously. I'm not a movie guy, as you know, server, but...
So you just say it's bad.
Yeah, it's bad. Amalie. Am I pronouncing it right?
It's a Yeah, and it's a fantastic piece of cinema.
Okay.
No one listened to Hartzell because he's not a movie guy.
All right. Well, there you go.
Fantastic piece of cinema.
It's also where the Lightning play and where the SEC tournament's going to be in a couple months.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right, last piece of basketball talk here on the show, Norlander. I've given you homework. I've asked you to come up with the best games of the week.
Yeah.
Preferably in chronological order because it's easier to follow along.
Of course.
There's a handful of ranked teams playing on a Monday night. But, I mean, feel free to take this wherever you want to go in terms of, like, must-watch games for this week.
You know I got you covered here. All right, so we're going to start with Tuesday. We'll go Tuesday and then Wednesday before we reconvene on Thursday. We got some good stuff on Tuesday here. Chronological order, 7 o'clock on Tuesday, Michigan State at Illinois. This could, you know, ostensibly be for command of the Big 10 standings there. Michigan State, as I mentioned just a couple minutes ago, leads the conference. Illinois has this game at home. We await to see if Kofi Coburn is going to play in this game. Kofi Coburn did not play In Illinois' most recent game, a loss at Maryland on Friday night that almost no one saw because it was a Friday night college basketball game. We all know Hartzell's opinion on those such matters there. But nevertheless, Illinois lost by 16 points at Maryland and has now dropped two consecutive games because it lost a week ago at home in double OT and a great one against Purdue. So now Illinois is 6-2 in the league after starting 6-0. Coburn apparently in the Purdue game took a hit. He's undergoing concussion protocol. This is, weirdly enough, the same thing that kept Andre Curbelo out for an extended period of time. Now, Curbelo's back, which is big, but that's a huge spot for Illinois there against Michigan State, 7 o'clock on Tuesday night. Texas will play at – we got some 9 o'clock tips to follow. Texas will play at TCU at 9 o'clock Eastern, of course. If TCU were to win that game, then the Big 12's quest to get 8 teams into the tournament becomes extremely viable at that point, 80% of the league. If TCU's got to win, though, we'll see. TCU right now sits at 47th in KenPom, Texas is 17th. Other 9 o'clock tip to keep an eye on. I'm serious about this. Two tournament teams. Wyoming at Boise State. Wow. Mountain West Special. Wyoming is 15-2. Could have one of its best teams, maybe its best team in school history, man. Josh Allen love, right? Going against Boise State, 15-4, has won 12 in a row, including a game I know Hartzell was locked in on Saturday, 42-37 win at San Diego State.
Is this Mountain West midweek basketball lives on CBS Sports Network. So is that where this
is not, I don't believe this is a CBS Sports Network game, or maybe that. I'm looking at the KenPom schedule, and maybe it will be. 6:30 is Richmond at Rhode Island.
Oh, so
that's a 6:30 CBS Sports Network tip.
Rhodey,
and then maybe they're going to pivot and swing into Wyoming at Boise State. That might be the case. I just don't have it on my dock here. But Wyoming at Boise State, genuinely, really, really good Mountain West game, and that league is going to send. Listen, the reality is the Mountain West could send as many, if not more, teams to the NCAA tournament this season than the ACC. And for people that are, you know, parked in the heart of ACC country, that thought has to make you shudder. But it is reality this year. That's a 9 o'clock Eastern tip again on Tuesday night. Another 9 o'clock tip, Mississippi State at Kentucky. Let's see how Kentucky rebounds after the Auburn loss. Mississippi State, to me, seems destined to be that first four in, first four out bubble team, kind of dancing on the fence the entire season.
Man, you love Ben Hallen.
I don't know if that's true, you've loved that guy
since he was at Pitt. I mean, you've been a big Hallen guy going back over the years.
You might be overstating things. And then the other one, the biggest game of the night, Arizona at UCLA, 11 Eastern on ESPN. This never happens. And by this, I mean high-profile Pac-12 games happening on a Tuesday. This is only happening because the league had to flex into the scheduling because this game got postponed because of COVID. Yeah. The Pac-12 usually plays on Thursdays and Saturdays. Travel partners, the whole deal. If you follow college sports, college basketball, you know how that works. So we get a rare Tuesday night Pac-12 game, and UCLA is 13-2. It's coming off road wins against Colorado and Utah. It did its job. Arizona's done its job. It's 16-1. Only loss came at the Vols 3 days before Christmas by 4 points. Arizona ranks second in KenPom as we speak this morning. Number two, it's Gonzaga, Arizona, Baylor, Houston, and then Auburn. Oh, by the way, that's an 11 Eastern tip on Tuesday night. Fantastic. Might be the game of the week. That's Tuesday. I'll get to Wednesday in a second, but any thoughts on any of that stuff?
Well, so I read something, and you're more plugged into this than I am, but weren't there some issues with UCLA and, like, Pauly was empty. They weren't letting fans in. And didn't Mick Cronin say something? And now UCLA was like, hey, come on back. Yeah, come on.
Mick Cronin got it done, man. Yeah, he basically, at his press availability like 4 days ago, 5 days ago, he was like, you know, it's dispiriting to my players. They got to come, you know, we don't have anybody in the stands here. And we go and look across town, and the Rams playoff game is filled to capacity, you know. So I, you know, basically saying like, I don't understand why it can be one at one spot it can be okay, and at another spot it can't. But we can't, you know. You got other places where these buildings are packed, and we don't have it here. And then you get into the whole like, you know, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole. But the point is, he said that, and now it's changed. They will have fan capacity in Pauley Pavilion for Arizona UCLA. Should be a great game. I would think Walton's going to be on the call. I don't know this for sure, but that's 11 o'clock Eastern. I think Walton's going to be on the call for that.
And unlike Kentucky-Auburn, we're getting the rematch in the desert next week. Like, these guys are playing each other twice within pretty close proximity each other. So, yeah, you do love to see it. 11 o'clock Eastern tip on Tuesday night.
Woo! I'll be locked in. I will be locked in.
Get the kombucha ready in the Norlander household. That's a late game.
Minor subplot to this college hoop season is, like, four of the best games, if you say, like, four of the seven or eight best games of the season so far have actually taken place, like, at 11 Eastern or later on the East Coast.
It's not good Gonzaga for the sport, Duke. Man. I know you don't want to hear that.
But it's not. I'm not saying it is, and that needs to happen. Some of that is a function of college football TV scheduling, and so, like, Gonzaga-Duke was the Friday after Thanksgiving at 11 Eastern in Las Vegas. That's when you're going to get that game on TV. Like, that's just when you're going to get it. Unfortunately. So yet here's another good one. I know. Let's get some of these. And now, listen, we had Illinois-Purdue at noon a week ago, MLK Junior Day, and that was fantastic and one of the best games of the season. So we've had a little bit of both there.
Who you got Tuesday night, by the way?
Great question. Man, I'll take UCLA in that spot, but it is the moment for now, for everyone following college basketball closely, you know about Arizona. And I know it's a late tip, but if Arizona goes on the road and beats UCLA, then we're going to really be in a spot where Arizona is going to just, you know, the discussions about and attention paid to Arizona will increase in a major way if you go and you beat UCLA on the road. All right, Wednesday, games to know. It's not as good, but 6:30, CBS Sports Network, Providence at Xavier. Let's see if Xavier can get back on the track here. Xavier has never made the tournament under Travis Steele. Providence, I prefer Providence to win because, I might scoot over from Connecticut to Rhode Island on Saturday to catch that Marquette-Providence game. So Providence winning on the road would certainly be nice, but I got Providence and Marquette going on road games this week, so we'll see about that. But that is a 6:30 Eastern Wednesday tip on CBS Sports Network. What else we got there? Marquette at Seton Hall is an 8:30 tip. Well, that's also one to keep an eye on. I don't know. Other than that... 8 o'clock, Oklahoma at West Virginia. Sure, maybe. You got to really like Oklahoma's kind of got to have it. I talk about an eight bid Big 12 conference. Oklahoma's really sliding. It's going to have to get some wins here soon. Like it did enough on the front end, and now it's taken on water in a significant way. So winning at West Virginia would do wonders for that schedule overall. And then Florida plays at Tennessee. This isn't chronological. My apologies, but that's a 6 o'clock tip on Wednesday. And Tennessee's in a fine spot. Florida projects as a tournament team, but wouldn't mind a little bit of chaos there if the Gators beat the Vols, so keep an eye on that as well. That's your Wednesday night in men's college basketball.
There you go. I mean, the beauty of this, I mean, that's just off the dome, folks. I mean, New Orleans is just looking at the schedule. There's no notes. He's just, you know.
That's
I mean,
correct.
There's notes as to what games are televised by his parent company and network, but other than that, there's no notes. So
that's right.
Very nice. Impressive. Server, why are you shaking your head, man? Am I wrong?
I know what you're doing.
Let's close the show with some music talk, Serbs. What do you got? Now spinning. We like to end the show. We talk a little music. We have fun. We give each other a hard time. Last week we talked about CDs. My dad texted in and was like, I found some first issue Beatles CDs at a pawn shop.
First issue CDs.
That was
first
his way
pressings.
To connect.
Allegedly,
they were still sealed. He was very excited.
Cerber.
Can confirm CDs are back in my household. I had these laying around.
I was just going to ask, are those blanks? He's got a whole.
Well, they were. Because I don't have a CD drive. Like the new thing with laptops is no CD drive.
Right.
So I got a CD drive on Amazon and I just started burning all kinds of stuff. I won't go into this, but. The Strokes live in Switzerland 2011, phenomenal performance. That's a soundboard, super crispy.
Love it. Crispy.
We're just going to fill this wheel up.
Dig it. I read that story by Rob Sheffield, by the way, Rolling Stone. Good stuff. A little overstated a little bit of the CD mythology, if you will.
Wow, taking shots at Rob Sheffield, huh?
Wonderful music writer, classic, all-timer, Hall of Fame level. Love his stuff. Maybe overstated it just a little bit, but yeah.
Kids, CDs are back. I'm telling you, they're back. So, by the way, did you ever go to a Best Buy for a midnight CD release or like a media play or there was never an album where you waited to get your hands on an album?
Midnight, no.
And I grew up, I came up in the leak era. Like I'm about 5-6 years younger than you guys. So like still very much the same vibe, but the internet had really caught on for music and sharing when I was in high school. So like almost every album, it leaked like, yeah, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks early, if not a month and a half early. And
you'll
so
never,
there was
you'll
no
never
need.
Appreciate New Release Tuesday, Serber. You'll never understand how important
no,
that was.
No, I will. Like, I,
yeah,
I've,
now it's Fridays,
I've,
by
I've
the way.
I've woken up. Yeah, I've woken up first thing in the morning on Tuesday and gone to a record store and picked up an album. But more than likely, it was either leaked or then, to combat the leaking, everyone just started allowing you to stream early.
Yeah.
There was always like, yeah, exclusive stream through NPR or this platform or whatever. Because, you know, is that still a thing? Do people still leak albums? I don't think so.
Good question.
Because artists put them out so early now.
Couldn't tell you the last time an album leaked. I don't
know. like a Beyonce album, that's never going to leak because she just drops that shit.
Right.
That's right.
She doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm like Kramer on the E. So I normally bring up my charger. This computer that I'm on actually has a good battery. I'm at 4%.
Okay.
Charger's downstairs, but we're good. I'm just letting you know.
We're going to wrap up the show because Norlander did not bring a battery charger to the podcast taping today. Thank you very much, Matt. I appreciate
that. I got 4%. I got at least another 2 minutes here.
We will wrap up the show. We are back on Thursday. And
with a guest.
We will have a guest. TBD on that guest, but we will have a
100%
guest.
100%. We're getting a guest.
Talk college basketball with that guest. For Norlander and Serber, I'm Hartzell. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys on Thursday. So long.